I am an avid listener of National Public Radio. I've said it several times. I do. 91.5. I mean, everything I own is tuned to 91.5. But there is a show called Hidden Brain. Shankar Vedantam is the host. And this show called Hidden Brain, it's a podcast. He gathers social science research that describes for us how we use our brain in ways we might not so easily see. Recently on the podcast, he did a show on the competitive nature of human beings. There was a very small reward that was given or promised to people who would play a particular video game. And when people were in the room alone, they would play it for so long and then stop, whether they had achieved the reward or not. But when you put more than one person in the room and they were called to play the game, no one would stop until the first one stopped. And so what was an hour worth of playing would grow to 3 hours. And depending, when there were two men, it grew to 4.5 hours. But one of the findings of this particular episode was that we are so competitive that we will sacrifice rest in order to continue to compete. He talked about, as a species, how we will give up the natural rhythms of when our bodies need to stand up from chairs or move away from tables, that we've given up the concept of rest in part because we're so competitive. He went on to talk about how the natural rhythms of sleeping when the sun sets and rising when the sun rises has just been destroyed by the electric light and our capacity to work 24/7. But our bodies, made in the image and likeness of God, a God who rested and hallowed the seventh day, our bodies were made to rest. The American Medical Association has done a great deal of research on this, and they tell us that when we do not rest, our minds don't have the capacity to release some of the toxins that cause our brains to hold on to data we no longer need. The less rest we get, the more crowded our hard drive becomes, and the less well it functions. When we don't rest, literally our bodies cannot heal. When we don't rest, our souls cannot be deepened. They went so far as to say that the functionality of our immune system is compromised when we don't rest, that our ability to react under stress is decreased, and even our capacity to regulate body temperature is changed when we don't rest. And then I got the part that really upset me, that obesity is tied to the absence of rest. My doctor called me obese recently, so I'm, you know, sort of dealing with this. I heard that laughter, Mr. Akerstrom. We are designed to rest. And literally, this research says, when we don't rest, we begin to kill ourselves. I wonder if that's what God was trying to say to Moses. Get really clear about the 31st chapter of Exodus. Moses has been on the mountain, Mount Sinai, for 40 days. If you go back and read in the Exodus experience, the thunder and the lightning, the technical word is the theophany of God, has been shaking around him. He has been in the presence and in the midst of God all of this time, and God has been offering him advice and law and commandment. And then it's in the 32nd chapter, just after these verses, in the 32nd chapter, that Moses comes down from the mountain. But what teachers of public speaking will tell you is the last thing you say to people is what often gets lodged in their heart and in their soul. This is the last thing God says to Moses before Moses comes down off the mountain after 40 days. In Exodus 31, in just two verses, God says to Moses, I want you to speak to them personally and tell them this. If they won't rest, I will kill them. If they won't rest, I will put them out. If they won't rest, I will kill them. Do you have to say it twice? Yes. Because God is serious about rest. We have forgotten that we are not designed to be human doings. We have forgotten that our capacity to produce, our capacity to run on empty, is not of God. I told this story not long ago. My Apple products would not work, my iPhone, and I took it into the genius at the Genius Bar. And I presented it to him, a fairly new iPhone, and I said, it just won't calibrate well. He looked at me and said, how often do you turn it off? I said, well, never. This 12-year-old behind the Genius Bar said, even your iPhone products have to rest. He said to me, turn it off for an hour every week. Because it is only in its off mode, my iPhone, it is only in its off mode that it can receive instruction fully and take it in deeply. My iPhone. And in Paul's letter to Corinth, we are reminded by the Apostle Paul that the spiritual does not come first. The natural comes first and the spiritual follows. My iPhone became the gospel of Jesus Christ. But I'm not alone in not turning off my iPhone or myself. I trust I've got good company in this place. But when we rest, it is a sign that we believe God. In that Exodus text, God says, Moses, go tell them face to face. This is what I want for them. This is how I've made them. When we rest, we are being obedient to God. And we see in the text that this is what God desires for us. And we believe God. We believe the word that says, in 6 days, God made everything, but on the seventh day, God rested. God was not tired, but God was showing us by example. When we rest, we trust God. You see, beloved, this marvelous theologian named Walter Brueggemann wrote a book a couple of years ago, tiny book, but thick, that's called Sabbath as Resistance. In Brueggemann's book, he suggests over and over that when we choose to rest, what we are doing is saying out loud, God, it is not my productivity. It is not my brilliance. It is not my ability. It is not my presence in the world that keeps the world turning. I trust that you are God and I am not. Beloved, if you take a nap, the world will not end. If there's something that you just know you have to finish by 2:30 tomorrow, the world will not end. We trust God enough to hear God's word to us and choose to rest, saying, God, you are the sovereign creator. You are the maker of heaven and earth. I am the created. And if, in fact, you call me to rest, remind me. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. We can rest because our provision is not from our hands and we belong to God and not to the world. You see, it is this relentless pace of the world that we've given into. That's why Brueggemann calls his book Sabbath as Resistance. We are resisting the culture that says to us, it's all about us. We are resisting the culture that says, I value you based on what you can do for me or what you can create. We are resisting the culture that says your worth is in the nouns and verbs that are about you. But it is not the nouns. It's not who you are. It's not the verbs. It's not what you do. Stripped of all of that, you are God's chosen and beloved and redeemed and called child. We won't rest because just like Israel, remember where they heard this word, Exodus 31. They are on the path. They are in the middle of an experience over which they have nada, no control. They are in the midst of an experience that they don't know what's around the next corner. They're in the midst of an experience where they have been required to leave everything they know. And God says, I'll show you where I'm going to send you along the way. No GPS, no map. Trust me. Like Israel, we don't know how to rest because we're not where we want to be. Israel wanted the promised land. They had heard those grand and glorious stories of where they were going to go, but they weren't there yet. And so they believed their relentless production would get them there faster. And if you read the story of Israel through their Exodus, you know that their relentless production and taking things into their own hand caused them to spend 40 years to go what should have taken them 3 months. Beloved, when you will not rest, you will end up on a path that is not the one God intends. And what may well have been a lovely journey becomes fraught because we are tired and we can't see where God is taking us. But we rest in the midst of not always knowing what is next because we know who holds our fate in divine hands. Israel couldn't rest because they hadn't reached their destination. They couldn't rest because they didn't know what was next. You don't know, I don't know what's next in our lives, but I rest in the confidence that you are God. You know, and you know me altogether well. Israel wouldn't rest because they were in a perpetual state of worrying about what was next. If you've ever looked at Numbers 33, you will see this long list of names of all of the cities through which Israel traveled. One of them is Dophka, which means depressed and on the bottom. One of them is Mara, which means bitter. One of them is Oboth, which means mumbling voices. One of them is Ben-Jakim, which means sons twisted out of shape. Zalmona, the valley of death. They don't know what's next. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Please note that favorite song, yea, though I walk through. The promise to God to Israel on their exodus and the promise to God to us is we are not stuck. We are moving through. You can rest in this knowledge that we are more than conquerors, that God has us in the palm of God's hand. Though I don't know what's next, I know God. Israel would not rest because they had forgotten that God was there enough. Manna and quail, shoes that never wore out. Throughout the Exodus journey, all that they needed, God provided. Maybe not what they wanted, maybe not when they wanted it, but their provision was sure. Beloved, you are so precious to God, so precious that your provision is sure. We do not have to work so hard. We can choose to rest. Now, there's more than one kind of rest in the text, because some in this congregation are sitting very comfortably saying, I rest. Betty Mitchell, who we will celebrate her life, you dared not call Betty between noon and three because she was asleep. She took a nap every day, and when she awoke, her tea and cookies were waiting for her by her husband, Wayne. She rested. And I know there are others in here who understand the physical nature of rest. So this kind of rest, sabbat in the Hebrew Bible, or anapausis in the Greek Bible. In fact, when you read that text from Matthew 11 and Jesus says, my yoke is easy, my burden is light, come unto me for rest, it's anapausis. It's rest from activity. There are some who do this well. There are others of us who need to learn this lesson. But just because you do this well, let me suggest there are other ways to rest. Sukkot. There are people in this place who have to rest from internal anxiety. You wake up anxious. You go through the day anxious. You fall asleep anxious. The God who loves you said, Sukkot. I will give you a peace that passes understanding. I will keep your heart and mind, but you have to trust me. There is a wastebasket underneath the table that sits by my bed. Every night when something churns up in me, I write it on a piece of paper and I throw it there. And I say to God, if I just have to pick it back up in the morning, I know where it is. But between now and tomorrow morning, I'm trusting you. Somebody sent me an email yesterday meant to vex my spirit. It's in the garbage can. When I got in my car this morning to come to work, I got ready to gin up about it again, and God said, let it go. You don't know what I'm up to. Sukkot. Release the internal anxiety. And there's another, nuach, to rest from external anxiety. These words all are translated rest in our Bible, but they mean remarkably different things. Caller ID is your friend. You don't have to answer every call, because some of that external anxiety comes from the people who call. You know the drama kings and queens in your life. Don't look around in case they're near you. Beloved, there are people, there are circumstances that just rob us of our external peace. God would say, maybe this is your kind of rest. And finally, Manoach. This is the only noun. Manoach is a physical resting place. A noun. Where can you go in your house, in your neighborhood, in your spirit, where you find a place of rest? Where can you go that is a place of peace for you? I have two chairs in my office at home. They are unattractive. My father upholstered them for me. Andre tries to throw them away. I've claimed I'll have the chairs maybe longer than I have. I'm only kidding. I have a picture when I was this big, held by my grandmother, born in October, she died in February. It's the only picture I have with her holding me in that chair. I sit in that chair and Miranda, my grandmother's name, is with me. Her daughter, my mother, Willa, is with me. God is with me. No matter what is going on in my life, I can sit in that chair and it is my Manoach. What is yours? For the God who loves you desires for you to have a place where you might go, where you might find rest, and desires that you go there frequently. Jesus, as the disciples were so busy, so engaged, Jesus, as he's looking out on the masses that are following him, men and women who are besieged by the difficulty of living in that time, he looks at them and says, come, come, all. Please note, all, not just those who believe in me, not just those who have gotten right with the world, not just those who have genuflected and offered confession, all who are weary and heavy laden, come, take my yoke upon you. In other words, follow the way I lead. And here's my promise. I will give you rest. We have a promise that rest is ours. We have a requirement to rest. So let me ask you this. Do you see yourselves as worthy? So worthy that God would say, rest. Do you see yourselves that loved, so loved that you would stop from worry or anxiety or activity and rest? The God of all creation says, I made you. I made you in a particular way. You need rest. Come. All. I will give you rest. Amen.